Hello and thank you for downloading Wax Lyrical, the advertising and marketing podcast from Wax On and the Marketing Society, and I'm Mark Renicus.
Hi, and I'm Paul Jacobs, and welcome to our first podcast of 2021. Wow, it's wishing everyone a better new year this year. And this podcast is all about Veganuary, which we're kind of well into already. And our special guest today is Ellen Roberts, co-founder and head of marketing at vegan food brand Better Nature. So welcome, Ellen. I hope it's not too late to say, I suppose, Happy New Year and Happy Veganuary. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to join you both. And yes, Happy New Year and Happy Veganuary to you both as well.
Feels like the right way to start the year, doesn't it? So yeah, let's start with Veganuary then, as we're well into it already, and it's going to be a hot topic for us today. So yeah, I'm thinking about its organisers are saying this year is going to be the biggest it's ever been. Why do you think that is, Ellen?
I think there's a lot of different reasons. I think kind of knowledge of vegan food and veganism in general and the reasons behind it is definitely growing. But I also think the options available are just growing so, so quickly. It's quite hard to keep up with. Even as a longtime vegan myself, I've been vegan for almost 7 years now. And even I can't keep up with kind of all the things, all the new product launches that have been happening over the last 2 years, and a lot launching this month as well. So we've seen so many already, which is really exciting. So I think people are just realizing that it is easier than they think. It's just as tasty and can be a lot kind of more healthy and sustainable for them as well. So yeah, I think it's just there's more drive and also just more accessibility to do it, which is really exciting. So I was
actually quite surprised how long it's been running for. You said 7 years now. I mean, I guess you've seen it change quite a lot. I suppose it's probably gone from quite small to incredibly mainstream. You know, what are the main changes you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think, even when I kind of went vegan in the beginning, I didn't do it through Veganuary or anything. I actually didn't really know much about Veganuary. When I first went vegan, I was living in Australia and it wasn't as big a thing there. And then I came back to the UK and kind of noticed it a little bit. But I think I've only kind of taken note of it probably in the last 3 or 4 years. It's only felt like it's actually come into the mainstream at all then. But I think definitely over those years, it's just become a bit more, definitely just more accessible. That's what I quite like about it. I think the language around it is changing. I know a few people on the team at Veganuary who are lovely people, and they're very much about trying to make it just as easy for people as possible and not kind of being too stressful, putting too much pressure on people and kind of saying, you know, if you mess up, that's fine, just come back to it. And I think it's a really refreshing way of talking about it. And I think that for me is probably what's really changed over the last few years and what's made more people feel like they may as well just give it a go and see what happens. So yeah, I think it's a really, really good way just to get people to test it out. And then even if they don't go fully vegan, they kind of learn more vegan recipes and they can eat a little bit more vegan going forward in the year.
Definitely. I think it presents a really good opportunity for inspiration through trial almost. And kind of it's not, I think it's losing the stigma of being, oh, okay, yeah, it's just going to be a fad for January, for example, or it's a charity thing that people might confuse it with. So I think it's a step in the right direction for people doing it throughout their lives more. And we'll come more to kind of flexitarianism as well shortly, as well as talking more about Better Nature. But kind of how important is Veganuary for you at your business, Ellen, and Better Nature?
Yeah, I think Veganuary is an interesting one. I think on the one hand, as a vegan brand, it's a great opportunity because obviously people are considering veganism that wouldn't have considered it before. People are probably more actively looking for new options, and there's just a little bit more of a spotlight, obviously, on vegan food. But then on the other hand, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but like all the big sort of vegan food launches all happen in January now because it's a great time to launch your new product. So it's a small brand. Sometimes it can actually be a bit tricky to really cut through the noise and to get people to actually take note of what you're doing. So it's a bit of a, I don't know, I think on the one hand it's great, but as a smaller brand, it probably doesn't have as much of an impact as you would hope or expect. But it's certainly, I think, for the vegan movement in general, which is obviously really important to us, it's a brilliant month and it's so uplifting and lovely. So yeah, definitely overall good, but I think it's kind of hard to make that much of an impact.
We heard that it's going to be bigger than ever. Here's a thought, Ellen. Because we have been and are continue to be in lockdown, I'm sure that people have been more focused on themselves. You know, we've heard a lot about self-care. I wonder if there's also an element of community in it as well, that, you know, we've been feeling isolated, and joining in with a group of people who are doing something could be quite uplifting too. Do you think that will help lift it in 2021?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I actually hadn't really considered it in that way, but I think that's a really, yeah, I think for sure. I think, as you say, people are just trying to be connected in any way possible now and try to be bigger than, you know, part of something bigger than themselves. So for sure, I think that community feel and just being part of a movement. And also, I think just having some hope for a brighter future, whatever that looks like, is something that people are really craving right now. So yeah, definitely. I hadn't thought about it, but I think that's a really going to be a really important element this year.
So I've got to confess, Ellen and I know each other, and you know I've described myself as a flexitarian, and I'm trying to cut down on my meat and my dairy. So I'm trying Veganuary, so help me. Tips for sticking with it and not losing the faith. What should I do?
I think first and foremost, it really, what I would say to anyone is just not to be too hard on yourself. And if you do mess up, you kind of feel like, oh, I'm just not sure how to replace that, don't worry too much. I think it is always harder to commit to something when you feel like you absolutely can't fail. I think when you give yourself a little bit of space and know that even if you kind of mess up a little bit, that it's fine, you just have to keep going. I think that makes it a lot mentally just a lot easier. So I think that's first and foremost. Also, it's a hard thing to do, to change your diet completely, you know, overnight. It's quite a tricky thing. And a lot of people that you speak to actually don't suggest that people do, you know, certainly not go from eating meat to go vegan overnight, because obviously it is such a change and it's really hard to kind of change so many aspects of your diet at once. So I think just accept that it will, yeah, that it won't, you won't be able to do it necessarily perfectly, but that's fine. And the fact that you're doing it is really great in the first place. And also then just to try and enjoy it, try and sort of see it as an opportunity to try things you haven't tried before and try new recipes. And I know obviously, you know, not everyone has the luxury of time to be able to spend time kind of trawling through recipes and then, you know, buying the ingredients, then trying to cook up new things. But I think if you do have the time and you can, then use it as something fun, and maybe do it with a partner, or do it with someone else that you're in the house with, or even do it with a friend remotely, and kind of chat to each other about it. Actually, funnily enough, I didn't do Veganuary, but I did go vegan with one of my friends, and she's also vegan to this day. And for us, it just made it so much more fun, because it was something that we did together, and we kind of, yeah, were able to share how we found it, what we were struggling with, and share any new recipes that we came up with. So yeah, I'd say don't be too hard on yourself, try to make it fun. And also just look at all the resources there are online, especially like Instagram pages. There are some really good ones. So on like Accidentally Vegan UK, which is run by the Vegan Kind Supermarket, they're brilliant in every way. They're very sort of understanding and very supportive of everyone that's just trying to become more vegan. And they give great tips on kind of what things you can swap. I think I saw something this morning, which is all the chocolates you can swap. So if you're a fan of like a Milky Way, try this. If you're a fan of Bounty, try this. So just like little tips like that, I think, are really helpful. And there's loads of stuff online as well. So yeah, those are kind of things I would recommend doing.
And you're right, I am already enjoying it. And my YouTube homepage is filled with recipes, vegan recipes already. So how about this? Share a recipe with me. What's your favorite quick? Because, you know, that you're right. When we're really busy, we don't get too stressed about not being able to do it. What's your favorite quick and easy vegan recipe?
Obviously, it varies kind of different sort of moods and what I'm looking for. But I'd say something that people often don't realize that you can do, which I just have a bit obsessed with, is like a cheesy sauce. So you can make it with anything, really. Typically, it's made with cashews, but I've been trying to use fewer cashews recently. So I've tried doing it with walnuts. And literally, all you need to do is just pop them in boiling water for like 10 minutes, just really softens them, and then mix them with some water or milk, your choice, and then some nutritional yeast, which sounds really weird, but it's a very natural product. It's really good for you as well. It's got a lot of vitamin B12 in it, which is something that can be lacking in a vegan diet. And it has like a really cheesy taste. So you add some of that in, some salt and pepper, maybe a bit of garlic if you fancy, and then just blend it up. And you've got a really kind of thick, creamy, cheesy sauce. And then you can add that to anything, really. So I often add it to pasta, along with some tempeh rashers, of course, and then kind of any sort of veggies that I have around. Or recently I made it into a lasagna, which sounds hard, but actually was really easy. Because once you've made that sauce, all you need to do is kind of make a mince of whatever you fancy, which obviously you can make with our tempeh, or you can do like lentils. So yeah, I'd say that's probably something that people don't necessarily realize is as easy as it is. And it's so like indulgent and tasty as well.
I'm adding that one to my to-do list. That sounds great. Because one of my pals is vegan, and he tells me that he struggles with cheese alternatives when there's cheese recipes. So I'll share that with him. One of the things I've come across when I've been looking at Veganuary and reducing our meat and dairy is the phrase, it's good for you and it's good for the planet. Can you remind us what the health and the environmental benefits are, please?
I think the main thing to focus on, what I kind of say to people, is that you can get everything that you need from a plant-based diet. And people often don't believe me, but you really, really can. And the thing that people often get worried about, which I mentioned just a few minutes ago, is the vitamin B12 content, because that is something that you can't typically get from plant-based foods. And so people assume that means that you must have to eat meat. But actually, vitamin B12 comes from the soil. And so the reason we don't get it now is because we're not kind of eating food straight from the soil as we used to. It's all sort of too clean and sanitized almost in a way. And typically animals get, well, they naturally eat food from the soil, so they'll have some, but usually not enough to actually go into the meat or the dairy or eggs or whatever. And so they actually get injected with it, which is why meat sort of naturally, I'm using inverted commas, naturally has B12, whereas plant-based foods typically don't. So that's something, so taking a B12 supplement is something that everyone should be doing, really, if you're not having meat or dairy or eggs. And yeah, so it's not a reason sort of not to kind of to be scared of a plant-based diet, which I think, you know, naturally when something has can result in a deficiency, people assume it's not healthy, but actually that's not the case. We are working at Better Nature to create naturally sort of enriched B12 tempeh products, but that will come down the line, so maybe it is possible. But yeah, I think generally with a vegan diet, it's just a lot lower, I mean, much obviously lower in cholesterol. There is no cholesterol in plant-based foods. It's much more efficient when it comes to protein. So I think protein is something else that we don't really understand as a society. We think everything needs to be, you know, as much protein as possible. And this idea that a lot of people, that especially people that go to the gym, they need loads and loads of protein. But actually, as a society, we actually eat way too much protein. And so especially animal protein, which has a lot of has carcinogens in it, which obviously can result in cancer. So trying to reduce that and, you know, instead focus on increasing things like fiber and all the other sort of micronutrients we should be looking at, which is things like calcium, which again is very much associated with dairy, but actually is very rich in things like spinach and broccoli, and doesn't also result in a lot of saturated fat and cholesterol, which can be causing health issues elsewhere. So I think it's just, for me, I just try to think of it as that in a plant-based diet, I can get so much, basically all of what I need. And I also don't get any of the things that can cause health issues. And if you look at it, the science, the links between a heavily animal-based diet and a plant-based diet, typically a plant-based diet is much lower in disease, which is obviously what we're all aiming for. So yeah, I think that's a very, very quick summary, but I could go on for hours, but yeah, it's generally a much healthier diet for us all.
You make a very compelling case for it. And I've read claims that it could reduce carbon emissions by up to 80% if we were able to shift to more of a plant-based diet. So do you foresee a future without conventional meat production?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think it's important to recognise that not everyone can go vegan necessarily. I think there are many, many reasons, whether it's health reasons in terms of, you know, people already having very limited diets and it's kind of about getting just enough energy into their bodies. People that live in food deserts, for example, you know, even accessibility, a lot of vegan foods. I mean, there are a lot of vegan foods that are accessible, but for someone that's, you know, on a limited budget and can only sort of spend so much a day, maybe a meat option is what's kind of more sustainable for them. So I think, for me, looking at veganism and not considering those factors is quite dangerous. And I think it's always important to make sure that, you know, veganism always has to go hand in hand with making the food world much more accessible for people and making sure that people have access to nutritious foods first and foremost. But yeah, definitely down the line, I mean, if I could dream, then I think it would be great. I mean, but yeah, I don't think it's going to ever be a world where some people aren't eating meat. Maybe, you know, they're killing animals themselves to do so. But I think this definitely sort of the factory farming elements and the mass farming, that I think definitely will go at some point, because it's just not, it's not sustainable for our planet, and it's certainly not very nice for the animals involved either.
And what about the new emerging alternatives? I think they're called cell-based meat alternatives. How do you feel about them, and are they a viable option?
Yeah, I mean, I have been to quite a few conferences which have spoken a lot about cell-based meats. It's really, really interesting, and it just blows my mind, to be honest, the fact that's even possible. I think it's really cool. I don't know too much about kind of specifically in terms of like their carbon footprint and all that. I mean, I think for now it's quite tricky because they're so early on in the process that their carbon footprint's actually massive, because all they've managed to produce is, you know, a few steaks at this point. And, you know, it's obviously spent a lot of time, money and energy getting to that stage. But I think down the line, it certainly will be more viable. I mean, for me, I'm not sure I would want to eat it, because it still is like an animal based product in the sense, so for more for health reasons, I don't know if I'd feel comfortable with it. I'd obviously need to get more information, but I think from a sustainability perspective, it's exciting. And I think the only concern is whether people would actually feel comfortable to eat something like that. I don't know. I think that will definitely take a lot of work, especially by people like us, to try and get people not to think that's really weird and not to have this association that it's artificial, which we know is something that people are pushing back on. So yeah, I think it's definitely exciting, and I just think it's incredible they can do that. But yeah, I'm just not entirely sure, to be honest, how well it'll be adopted by the everyday person. I think the tech world is very excited about it, but sometimes that doesn't necessarily translate into what the average person thinks.
The science is a bit beyond me, but can you kind of help me? And alert, this is going to get a bit gruesome, I think, because I believe they take a cell from the placenta of a chicken at the moment, because they're only making chicken meat. And it's only available in Singapore, I think, as well, isn't it? And then they grow it. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's not just chickens. They're all doing right. Every type of meat. So there are quite a lot of cell-based meat companies out there at the moment, quite a lot in the US, particularly in the West Coast. But it's something along those lines. I'm not entirely sure where they take the cell from, but exactly, they take a cell and then sort of grow it from that. So I think that technology is pretty much has been done. I think what kind of now is trying to get the structure correctly and kind of really get that balance between sort of the fat content and the muscle and, you know, getting that whole kind of meaty experience. I think that's going to be the big challenge. But yeah, it's kind of along those lines, I think.
I mean, wherever the cell comes from, I'm just thinking, what on earth has that marketing campaign got to be to try and make to try and make that sound remotely appealing?
I know.
Yeah. Let's add a bit of colour to who our listeners are tuning into today, Ellen, and kind of dig into kind of what's led to you being co-founder of Better Nature. So as Mark confessed, we do know you, and from kind of looking into your past, you studied experimental psychology at Oxford and then started an advertising career, which is good. Many of our listeners are from that space. And is it right you would think about becoming a planner?
Yeah, exactly. I studied psychology at uni, which I really, really enjoyed and found, yeah, so interesting. But I wasn't sure I wanted to go into psychology and actually become like a clinical psychologist or a researcher or something. But I knew I wanted to use it in some context, but in a more maybe more creative sense and a business sense. So I was really unsure what I wanted to do when my last year of uni. I didn't really have any idea. And then I stumbled across sort of advertising, but more specifically planning, which is what got me really excited about potentially having an advertising career. And then it took me, as always, ages to kind of try and find a way to get into planning, because it's just so, so difficult, especially as a junior person. And then eventually found a role. I was very lucky to find a role in an ad agency in Cardiff. And yeah, I was there for over a year, it's not even that long. And then one of my friends, Chris, said to me, I'm thinking of setting up a business. Do you think you'd want to be involved? And I was like, oh, okay then. So learn more about it and realize it was so aligned with what I wanted to do with my life, which is always kind of wanting to help kind of the world become a happier, fairer, more sustainable place. And yeah, I mean, I didn't really know what I was getting myself in for, to be honest, but I thought, why not? May as well kind of take a chance on it. I knew Chris was someone who was very driven and very switched on. So I was like, okay, I think he's a good person to be doing this with. And then I met Ando and Fabio, who would also be setting it up with us. And yeah, it just kind of felt like it made sense. So that's kind of how I've ended up here at Better Nature.
That's great. Well, it's fascinating to hear how people's entrepreneurial stories kind of play out, whether it's a kind of, it was in your blood or a perfect storm of kind of people coming together, which it sounds like it was for you. And I'm sure many of our listeners are thinking, well done you for getting in and out of advertising before it caused too much damage. Anyway, so we've been fortunate enough to meet Chris as well, and we'll dig a bit more into kind of Better Nature. But tell us, just I guess for everyone listening, tell us a bit more about kind of the products and, of course, what stands you apart with Tempeh?
At Better Nature, we say we make protein without compromise. So meat alternatives that are as delicious as they are nutritious. And in the same vein, we also try and be as sustainable and ethically sort of produced as possible. So we do this using tempeh. So tempeh is a all-natural plant-based protein originating in Indonesia. It's made through typically using cooked soybeans and fermenting them together to bind them into a meaty block. That block is then really high in protein, fiber, calcium, iron, manganese. I could go on. It's also fermented, so it's great for the gut as well. And what's even more amazing about tempeh is it can be used so much for other uses. So we're working on a lot of research at the moment with it. We're turning it into all kinds of products, and we're also making it even more nutritious by naturally enhancing its vitamin B12 content, as I mentioned earlier, as well as now starting to look into enhancing its vitamin D content as well. The thing with tempeh is, it is just really, really simple and natural. And it is really versatile in all kinds of ways. So it's naturally versatile, even if you cook with it at home. But for us, creating new products, there's so much it can do, which is really exciting for us. And it just gives us a way to offer people really tasty, nutritious and accessible protein products that they can use in kind of a plant-based way, which is really exciting. So for us, that's kind of where we feel like we stand out in the market.
And you're relatively early on in your kind of in the Better Nature's journey, but how is distribution so far? Kind of where can we buy them?
Yeah, so we currently sell on our online shop, which we've actually been doing now since the start of last year, which I can't quite believe. I can't quite believe we're at the start of 2021, to be honest. We also sell on the Vegan Kind supermarket. We sell on Amazon, Planet Organic, in almost 200 independent stores across the country. We've got a few confirmed exciting new launches coming up in the next couple of months, and we're chatting to a lot of the multiples as well. So hopefully you'll be able to grab them in a local supermarket very soon.
So you said you were invited to become part of Better Nature. It sounds like it's been an exciting journey. So you are an entrepreneur, like it or not now, Ellen. Has it been what you expected?
No, not really. I don't really know. I don't think I had anything I could have possibly expected. I never knew anyone that was an entrepreneur, really. So I didn't really have any, I had nothing to compare it to. I didn't really know what I was getting myself in for. I think when it all kind of came about, the idea, I was just a bit, I couldn't even process it, to be honest. And then so even the idea that I was originally told it was going to be completely changed. And it's been such a whirlwind, but I think in some ways it's probably been more challenging than I expected, but in other ways I think it's also been a lot better than I expected. I think there's quite a lot of talk about in startups where it's like you have no life, you can't do anything else. And I think it's been quite nice with them. We have a really lovely team, and everyone is just so supportive of each other. Everyone's so supportive of everyone, looking after themselves and looking after their mental health. And that's something that's always been really important to me. And so in many ways, actually, we've done so much, achieved so much, but done it in a way which on the whole has been really sustainable for ourselves as well. And that's been something I probably wouldn't have expected quite so much. So, it's been a journey for sure, but on the whole, definitely a positive one, and lots of lessons learned along the way, which have definitely translated into my personal life as well and have been really valuable.
And working with you, I can see that. I can see that you are mindful in the way that you work for yourself and the way that you work with others. Maybe we should talk a bit more about that. But the general question I have is, if somebody's listening and, like you were, is in a conventional job and they're thinking of being entrepreneurial, what advice would you give them? And tell us a bit about how you are mindful with each other.
I think what advice I would give people is that there are many ways in which we were lucky. So when we started out and we had this idea, we were very lucky to get some investment early on, which meant that we were able to focus on this full time, which was a massive privilege that I know a lot of people don't have. So I think it is hard because I know a lot of people start out working on these, on their new businesses. It's almost like side projects, and that can be very draining in many ways. So I think what I would say to people is make sure that you can do it in a way that doesn't just completely wipe you out, and do it in a way that is sustainable, whether that is maybe reducing the hours of your current jobs, even just a little bit, to have an afternoon off to work on it. Or just at least just be really sort of limited with the time you spend on it, and not just let it kind of let it be that you work, you know, however many hours a week, and then you spend all the rest of your time on your side hustle as you're starting out. I think that can be so dangerous, and really nothing is worth compromising your own well-being for. But and also just make sure it's something that is worth it and something that you really genuinely enjoy and is an extension of the passions you already have in your life. And I know that is the case for me. I'm very lucky that, you know, so much, almost everything of what I do in Better Nature are things that I'd be doing anyways. I love reading about, you know, seeing new kind of ad campaigns. I love reading about what's happening in the vegan space, talking to other brands, writing, reading. They're all things that I love. And so to be able to do that as my kind of, as my job is just such a privilege. So if that's something you can see, that you, there's something like an opportunity that you can see yourself to do that, then I think that's brilliant. You should definitely go for it, but just do it in a way where you're not compromising other areas of your life, including spending time with friends and family as well, because we all know how important that is. So yeah, I think dedicate yourself, your time to it, but do it in a really careful, mindful way, and make sure you're protecting yourself as well. That's what I'd say.
We talked to quite a few entrepreneurs on the podcast, and there's a bit of a theme. Often they tell us that it can be quite lonely. It sounds like you've got a great team with you. You're navigating the ship, if I can use the metaphor, from a marketing point of view. What about tough moments, brave decisions? The Marketing Society listeners often ask us to ask that question. Brave decisions you've had to take so far.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of decisions we've had to make, whether it's sort of, yeah, making a decision to do something, or sometimes making a decision not to do something. That can actually be sometimes the hardest, is even if you have an opportunity that seems really exciting, and to actually say, no, that's not right, either because it's not right for the business, or we just don't have the resources to do it. I think that's something that's really tricky, because as entrepreneurs, you always feel like you should be saying yes, you should be taking on everything and anything, and you know, any opportunity someone is giving you is, you know, it's such a privilege and so exciting, and should always take it on. But sometimes it's genuinely not worth it, and that's been something that, like, we have definitely learned the hard way at times, and we've definitely got better at. When it comes to, yeah, decision making, I think we are lucky to, as you say, to have quite a supportive team. But I'm part of a really good network called Found and Flourish, which is like a female founders network. And on that, it's a, I know a lot of women sort of lean on each other to have those decisions made. And they post on the Facebook group that we have, or they reach out to someone they know has been in a similar position. So I do feel like the entrepreneur world is becoming a bit more connected, which is really good. And so even if you don't have those people within your team, there are more and more ways in which you can reach out to people. And to be honest, not even just that, there are other sort of networks are part of things like Bread and Jam as well, which is food for food brands, and they're great, and we've met a lot of people through that as well. And we actually have a really lovely network of startups that kind of all help each other out as well. So one recently was planning on setting up an online shop, and they didn't know where to start, so they just dropped me a message, and we had a chat for an hour just going through everything, all the questions they had. And so I think it is really nice. So even if you are starting out by yourself, there are plenty of people out there that want to help you and support you, and have probably been in the same position before. I think that's the thing, we kind of think we're the first ones, but so much of what we're experiencing, you know, thousands of other brands have experienced the same. So it's definitely good to lean on each other.
Let's talk about it'd be amiss not to, the impact of obviously the COVID world that we're currently living in, particularly for a challenger brand. And Mark and I've been fortunate to talk to lots of people in your position, Ellen, that are kind of, they're trying to be listed in the major supermarkets. And we've seen a huge shift in their behaviors in terms of the choice they offer and the pressure they're under, I guess, from customers to deliver that choice. So how have you found that as a challenger brand trying to get listed in these multiples?
Yeah, it's been tricky for sure. COVID did sort of delay a lot of that for quite a few months, because obviously, understandably, supermarkets have just been desperately trying to keep their shelves filled and make sure that everything, you know, supply chains are all in place, and just, yeah, kind of keep up with the ever-changing environment that they're kind of working in, I guess. So it has been quite tricky to have those sort of ongoing conversations. But for us, we've just had to keep going, keep persevering, and just really put ourselves in their shoes and think, what is it that they're kind of going to be struggling with right now? What are going to be their objectives? You know, they often release sort of reports saying what they kind of want to achieve in the next few years. So really looking at that and seeing how we can fit that, how we can make their lives easier. And how can we kind of create evidence to show that as well? So we've done a few sort of customer research, to really evidence the points that we're making. So yeah, it's just about being kind of consistent and really not making it so much about ourselves and more actually about them and how we can make their lives easier in such a tricky year for them. And I think we've had a really good response and had quite nice sort of ongoing relationships with them. So yeah, hopefully that continues this year.
Yeah, and obviously, hopefully as we come out of this challenging times, lots of things are pointing in the right direction, certainly for the category as a whole. I know last year Tesco's came out and kind of unprecedented levels of investment in that area. I don't know if you've seen the latest Asda advert, but they really like plant-based is quite a prominent mention, which I saw as quite a surprise from that supermarket. So yeah, it's kind of all pointing in the right direction. So hopefully, as we're on that journey with you, Ellen, so hopefully that can be something that's part of 2021. Okay, yeah, you mentioned investment, and obviously you're fortunate to have some already, and I'm sure that's only the first step in your investment journey. But if we were to ask you, Ellen, kind of if you could choose anyone to bring on board as an investor, who would that be and why?
I think for me, a brand that I really look up to is BrewDog, and I think especially recently I've seen they've just done so many cool things, and the way they've sort of disrupted the beer space has just been amazing. So I think if I could get their founder on as an investor and to kind of help us disrupt the meat-free space in the same way, I think we'd be doing pretty well. I can't remember his name now, it's James something, but I've completely forgotten his second name. But yeah, I think someone like that would be really brilliant. Again, from a more selfish perspective, it'd be great to have someone really who I really admire sort of on a personal level. So, you know, someone like Michelle Obama wanted to come on board, I'd be very happy.
Well, of course, like any entrepreneur that you would speak to would have kind of, mentors or inspirations that they reference. So, and yeah, it's good to hear from an investment perspective, you kind of want to make sure it's not just money, it's money and value add, which I guess BrewDog have done a very good job of being very distinctive in their efforts over the last few years. I guess talking of investment, like what can we expect, I guess, coming from Better Nature next as you do start to take on more investment?
So for us, up until this point, we've kind of tried to focus on really kind of figuring out what exactly it is that we're able to do, how we're able to be distinctive in the market, and how we can bring that to life in a really reliable and exciting way for our customers. But I think up until this point, you know, as with any company, you do tend to focus on people that have a real buy-in into what you're doing already, which for us is very much the vegan market, maybe the sort of more organic market as well. So as we get on more investment and as we grow, it'll be all about really tapping into the sort of the mindset of the average flexitarian, which makes up, I think, about 9 million people in the UK. And make sure that our products really serve them and are accessible to people. You know, we don't want to be a brand that only a subsection of society are able to kind of understand the benefit of. We don't want to be a point that people just can't, you know, genuinely cannot afford. We want to be a product that anyone really can pick up off the shelf and be excited about, because that's the only way that will have the impact that we want, which is to create a world that's better for people, the planet and animals. So yeah, definitely our next round of investment and the next few years for us will be all about really tapping into that more sort of mainstream flexitarian mindset and making sure that everything we do offers value to them.
As you say, the flexitarian market is significant. Yeah, 9 million or so. I've read the same statistics as well. And we've all touched on surprising places. Paul mentioned Tesco. He was surprised by Asda. My favourite supermarket, I'll confess, is Lidl. They have just launched their own label vegan range as well for Veganuary this year. Nestle, Hellmann's, Knorr, Ben & Jerry's have all got vegan products as well in their ranges. Is there still space in a typical consumer shopping basket for a challenger brand like yours now?
Yeah, for sure. So I think for us, we're quite lucky, I guess, in a way where we're focusing on something pretty niche, which is tempeh. Although that's something that we don't shout about too much because obviously not many people know what tempeh is. The benefits that tempeh is able to offer is very unique, really, and no other company in the world is sort of looking at tempeh in the same way that we are and using that technology to create meal alternatives that genuinely don't compromise on nutrition, taste and versatility and sustainability as well. So we do feel that we're able to offer something that no one else in the market is for the time being, as well as doing that with a brand that kind of excites people and really inspires them to do better, whatever that looks like for them, and not sort of treat it like an all or nothing approach, but to kind of just inspire them and empower them to make choices every day that just contribute to a better world for us all. So yeah, we definitely feel like there is space to do that, but of course we'll have to wait and see. But we're confident that there's a really clear spot in the market for products like ours.
So Ellen, yeah, we're fortunate enough, obviously, to be working with you and have had a front row seat at kind of the internal workings of Better Nature. And you've set yourself some quite high standards in terms of kind of the way you work and the people that you work with. So tell us a bit more about kind of the internal goings on and your culture in terms of the kindness and the belonging stance, you know, the better way. And kind of how difficult is it to maintain those standards? Obviously, kind of we've seen a lot of those things written down, not kind of lived against. So tell us a bit more about how you kind of make sure you maintain those standards.
Yeah, we've always said that we kind of want to do things without compromise, which as a startup is not the easiest thing. So we probably should have considered that more carefully. But I think for us, I think it's all about how you define it. So for us, you know, living life without compromise and making protein without compromise, it's not necessarily about literally not compromising on anything, but it's about not compromising on the important things for us. And it's also for us, it's a mindset that we are led by an uncompromising love for people, the planet and animals, and that translates into everything that we do. So while we may not be able to be perfect, we will do whatever we can to really do what we feel is right. And I think we've been very, very lucky to have a very open-minded, progressive, and just really a team that's always just eager to learn. And that's just been brilliant. Every single team member provides a whole new perspective and has taught the rest of us so much. And that's just meant that we've been able to really push ourselves as a company to always be doing better. So this kind of came to, I think, one of the proudest things for me at Better Nature is our belonging framework, which is something that we made earlier last year with a diversity and inclusion consultant, Vanessa Bello. And it's basically a framework in which we talk about how we want to make sure that Better Nature is a place where anyone feels like they can belong. And that doesn't just consider maybe the more kind of commonly spoken about things like race and sexual orientation and gender, but also considering even things like education, mental health as well, and things that do often exclude people from work generally, but also feeling like they can really belong and thrive in a workplace. So it took us quite a long time to put it together and obviously work with Vanessa to do so. But it's been such an important exercise for us all, and it's been something that really does sit at the heart of what we do, because if we want to genuinely create a world that's better for people and planet and animals, you know, we need to make sure that's for all people. We're not, as I said earlier, we're not kind of claiming to be perfect, and there are definitely mistakes that will be made along the way, and we hold our hands up to that, but we are really always trying to do better, and I think we're always trying to be honest as well, where we do fall short. I remember last year, I think it was around July, there was like a big boycott against Facebook, and people were kind of refusing to do Facebook ads. And at the time, we were a very small business, you know, as we still are. And Facebook ads were quite an important source of sort of advertising for us and a way to push people to our online shop. And so we had a really hard think about, you know, because we fully believed in what the boycott was about. The boycott was about Facebook not sort of blocking hate speech and almost seeming to favor kind of racist bigotry over people that were actually speaking out against that. And it was just, yeah, terrible. So we were very much for it, and we knew as a brand we would be, but it was really difficult for us to make the decision as to whether we could justify that as a business, literally whether we could sort of survive as a business with the impact on sales. So we had to think about it carefully. And then we shared that, we shared our sort of internal thinking on our Instagram page, kind of saying that we thought about it and we completely believe in it and would want to do it, but we genuinely for that month can't justify it. But down the line, when we are in a much more sort of stable position and aren't quite so reliant on digital advertising, we would be able to do that. And I think, you know, that wasn't ideal, and we wish that we could have got involved with that because we totally believed in it. But sometimes as a brand, you do have to be practical, of course. You know, as I think the B Corp sort of organization say, without sort of something like without a profit, you have no mission, which makes sense. You know, if you can't sustain your company, you can't sustain your mission. So for us, we have in certain times we've had to be practical about that, but we're not going to hide behind it. We're just going to be open about it. We're going to say that we carefully considered it, but this is a decision we've had to make. And we got some really lovely feedback from followers saying, really appreciate you explaining that and totally understand your decision. And so, yeah, for us, it's not about being perfect, but it's certainly about making progress and being honest about our journey and how we get there.
Before we let you go, Ellen, we always have a bit of fun. And I think this question reveals a little bit about our guests. The question, as you know, is what is your favourite TV ad? It's often when the TV ad came out, which tells us a bit about you, how the TV ad was made, which tells us a bit about you. But anyway, I'll shut up. Tell us what your favourite TV ad is. And because we're audio, do your best to describe it for our listener.
So I had to think quite long and hard about this. It's hard when there's so much choice and there's so many ads that I love, but I think one I remember really, really enjoying and just, I don't know, really standing out from other ads that I'd seen was one I saw a couple of years ago by Audi called Clowns. And for those of you that haven't seen it, basically it's hard to explain, but it's sort of promoting safety features of the car. Am I right? Yeah. And it's sort of showing clowns driving the cars, and which sounds really silly. And I think it could have been really, I think when you actually describe it, it sounds terrible and you think, oh my gosh, who would ever want to watch that ad? But that's what's so great about it. I think they do it in such a beautiful way. Like I just genuinely find it beautiful. Like I remember at the time I just watched it again and again, and they use the most beautiful music with it as well. And it's just so, it's done in an almost graceful way, but it's showing how ungraceful these clowns are and basically saying that the car is clown proof, which I think is really clever. And I just love that it's kind of a play on the fact that, you know, you in your car, when you're angry and you're calling everyone else in other cars clowns because they're kind of getting in your way. But to do that in such a elegant and beautiful way, I thought was really impressive. And it definitely, yeah, just had a massive impact on me at the time. And I think, yeah, it just also balances sort of the beauty of advertising, but also the humor of advertising all in one ad. And yeah, again, just the music is lovely. And I think it just shows how important music is when creating TV ads. Isn't it rich? Are we prepared? Kneel the last on the ground. Where are the clowns? Send in the clowns.
And you know, we shouldn't dissect great work, but I'm going to do a bit, obviously, because we're all trying to remake those great ads, aren't we, Ellen? And, you know, you've touched on quite a few things that I'm passionate about, and Paul is too. Well, you know, first of all, it's very distinctive. It's distinctive for lots of reasons. I mean, who would put loads of clowns into a TV ad? And they're really heavily characterised clowns as well, aren't they? With the makeup is a bit weird and all this kind of stuff. And they don't talk. They just mime like traditional clowns would as well. So it's very distinctive. And again, music, Paul, a constant theme, isn't it? When we have ads that people have picked out, there's often a very, very distinctive piece of music. This one, and I'm ashamed to say I know too much about it, it's called Send in the Clowns. The ad came from September 2017. It was made by BBH London. This particular version of Send in the Clowns is by Faultline featuring Lisa Harrigan. I didn't know that. I had to look it up. But the song is originally from a musical theatre. It's from a musical by Stephen Sondheim called A Little Night Music. So it would be very reminiscent for lots of people. You probably knew it, but didn't know you knew it kind of thing, which is another clever thing as well, isn't it? It's like a meme there. So yeah, if I deconstructed it, lots of very clever ways that will make that ad very memorable. Well, thank you. Thank you for choosing that ad. Gives me a chance to play Send in the Clowns as well, which I always love playing a bit of music in the podcast. So thank you very much for being our guest. Thank you for your tips on veganuary. I will persevere. Paul, how are you doing with veganuary?
Yeah, we're trying to strike a balance. So I think that's what we're trying to do. Doing a little bit more.
Well, we'll keep going. Ellen, it's been a pleasure. And thank you very much again for instructing us more about better nature and how we can enjoy veganuary too.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining us, Ellen. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us again and wishing you all a very happy new year.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.